To what do I truly owe the honor and delight of your presence? Are you ready for your next lesson, or have you mastered your card trick already and have come to boast?
I stared out at the churning sea. Waves rolled and tossed themselves back and forth, much the same way my mind waded through new information. It's been 2 days, I said, still not looking at him. Do you honestly expect me to master tricks when bodies keep appearing?
Mephistopheles barked out surprised laughter. I don't deal in honesty, but you're a sharp delight, Miss Wadsworth. Shame you won't allow me the honor of cutting my heart in half.
I turned, finally meeting his stare. I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Well, I'm not sure I believe you, he said, regarding me carefully. Which means you're doing much better than I'd anticipated with your lessons.
Sleight of hand can hardly be applied in a situation such as this.
Can't it, though? Words themselves are tricky, wicked things.
He grinned, as if he'd uncovered some truth I hadn't hidden particularly well.
Anyway, what I mean is, every rose can draw blood as much as delight. Yet we do not hesitate to inhale their fragrance, do we? Danger does not detract from appeal, it increases it.
He bent near enough that his breath was a whisper of warmth on my skin. Gooseflesh rose. In fear or excitement, I couldn't discern.
I am unafraid of being pricked when the reward is so sweet. You, however, what is it that you're afraid of?
For some reason, Thomas's face flashed across my mind. Mephistopheles stepped closer.
What do you fear the most? Certainly not death. That you're intrigued by.
He placed his arms on either side of me, and I involuntarily tensed.
Ah, bars caging you in. Now that's something you're terrified of. If you want a life of freedom, simply take it for yourself. What's stopping you?
My heart beat so quickly, I feared it might cease. Is this part of tonight's lesson?
This?
He angled his face near my ear.
This is a bit of friendly advice. You cannot live your life following someone else's rules. Would you like to explore other avenues of science? Perhaps forensics aren't the only thing you're passionate about. You might enjoy putting your skills into engineering.
I tried to keep my breathing steady. He might be acting interested for show, but he saw the truth of me. A truth I didn't even think Thomas had discovered. It made me want to simultaneously hug him as well as kick him. I was intrigued by mechanical things. My father had crafted toys, and I'd always wished to learn how to make them myself. Father had taught my brother, but never indulged me, since I was a girl and it wasn't a proper feminine pursuit. I'd been given more dolls than I knew what to do with, but gears and bolts, that had been what I'd truly wished for. I want to speak with Gian, I said, breaking the strange moment. Take me to wherever the performers are, and let's make up whatever ruse you'd like.
I'm not sure it's a wise decision after tonight's events.
All the teasing in his face disappeared.
The performers have decided to deal with their stress in their own special way. It might get a bit sloppy.
He pulled out his pocket watch.
Likely it's already beyond sloppy.
Cassie's not with the other performers, I pointed out. Perhaps Gian is not engaged in whatever debauchery you're suggesting the others are doing.
Actually, I'm fairly certain he's the one passing out the liquor.
He stared off into the dark water.
I hope Andreas hides his swords again. Things got quite interesting last time he drank his mood away. The green fairy is a tricksy mistress.
He leaned against the railing next to me and glanced in my direction.
Do you believe he's capable of murder?
How can I possibly answer that when I haven't been able to speak with him more? If you're serious about solving these murders, then bring me there now.
Of course I'm serious about that. If this carnival fails, I have to go back to my old life, and I'd rather jump into the sea than find my way into another gilded cage.
I searched his face. Perhaps he and I weren't so different. Where are the performers? He raked his gaze over me, though it wasn't in his normal roguish way. There was something swift and almost analytical about it. He pushed himself off of the railing.
If you insist on attending this gathering, you'll need to dress the part. I brushed down the front of my velvet cloak. The dress underneath was a bit plainer than the evening gown I'd worn earlier, but there wasn't anything wrong with it. I frowned.
I want to blend in.
Which is exactly why you need to get rid of that boring thing. You'll be a ragweed in a bed of wildflowers.
He crinkled his nose.
Sometimes you need to stand out in order to blend in.
That makes absolutely no sense.
But it soon will.
He pulled out his pocket watch, seemingly from thin air again, grinning as I shook my head.
Lesson number 2 begins now.
16. La Fée Verte. Performers' Practice Area. RMS Etruria. 4 January, 1889.
Tug at that neckline all you wish, Mephistopheles whispered as we stood outside the door to the performers' practice area.
But I promise it won't suddenly sprout leaves and grow. It would defeat the purpose of décolletage.
I shot him my most scathing glare, though it was hard to tell if it had the same effect, as I was also wearing a filigree mask.
I cannot believe I allowed you to dress me in this. I look like a can-can dancer. My aunt would have heart failure if she knew.
I can see the redness in Mother's face now.
Liza smiled from behind her own mask. Perhaps I ought to suggest this theme for my coming out ball. Despite how exposed I felt, I smiled. Aunt Amelia would most certainly collapse onto a fainting couch should she see us in our current states. Liza's costume was similar to mine. We both wore red and black striped corsets, cinched tightly to show off our décolletage, as Mephistopheles had pointed out, and black tights. But somehow the ringmaster had managed to make me into his gaudy equivalent by adding extra embellishments. Sequins covered my risque bustle and drew the eye to parts of my physique that were desperately close to being bare. My white undergarments had ruffles and lace edged in silver, the only part of my costume that hinted at the Moonlight Carnival, which no one would ever witness as I refused to lift my skirts and show off my limbs. My silk top hat was black with red bullion, nearly identical to the hat he'd worn on opening night. Harry gave Liza an amused grin.
I can't wait to meet your old lady. Mother would suffice, Mephistopheles said primly. Old lady is crassly American of you.
Liza waved off the correction.
Can't we go in already? If we're only staying for an hour, I want to make it count.
She batted her lashes at me.
Please, you look stunning, Audrey Rose. Let yourself go a little bit tonight. Have some fun. We could all do with some lightness.
I didn't think fun was the most appropriate thing to focus on, what with the burnt corpse we'd seen earlier, but I let it slide. I needed to figure out which performer might be taking his or her theatrics to a murderous level, and a drunken soiree might be the perfect venue to garner information. Though judging from the vibration of the music, the party might be a bad idea. I glanced down at my exposed bosom and exhaled. Thomas would certainly be mad he missed this little act of mine, especially since he was always teasing about drunken debauchery.
Behold.
Mephistopheles pushed the doors open. Unlike the organized practice session from the night before, the room was in utter chaos. Music thumped off the walls. Masked performers danced to the hedonistic beat. Lines of women in can-can clothing similar to mine kicked their legs high, exposing their frilly underthings.
Is this the mischief you warned patrons about?
I asked, trying to gain control over my racing thoughts. Lights pulsed overhead, dangerously close to flickering out. Milky green drinks sloshed onto the floor and down people's chins, but they either didn't notice or didn't care. My attention moved from one scene to the next, heart pounding along to the drums. I'd never seen so many bodies in motion before, so many people dancing against each other in shocking ways. Clowns jumped over barrels, then tumbled to the ground, clutching their stomachs and laughing until their makeup smeared. Cigar smoke went up in different intervals throughout the cavernous room, the scent heavy and thick in the air. I had walked directly into the Devil's Lounge. This had been a terrible mistake. I took a step backward, right into the ringmaster's waiting arms. He leaned close, raising his voice above the clamor, and, despite the heat of the crowded room, chills wound their way down my body. This, Miss Wadsworth, is the mayhem portion of the show.
We stood so close, I felt his chest rise and fall with breath.
This is also a time to remember the first rule of thumb. Do not lose your head.
Don't worry, I don't...
Gian, performing a cartwheel, landed close to us, and I jumped back, nearly knocking Mephistopheles over in my haste to get out of harm's way.
Gian was equally impressive as the women who were doing the can-can. Instead of the usual glare he wore for me, he fixed us both with a sloppy grin.
Welcome to the real show!
He tossed an arm about my shoulders as if we were the best of friends, pulling me away from the ringmaster. I glanced behind me to where Mephistopheles still stood, trying not to laugh. So much for relying on him to help. My attention darted around, but Liza and Houdini had already slunk into the fray. It seemed no assistance would be coming.
Let's see what you can do,
Gian slurred.
Dance with me.
Oh, I don't think...
Exactly,
he shouted over the drums.
Don't think, just dance.
Before I could politely decline his offer, he spun me around, skirts flying upward as I twirled out and bumped into another dancer. She tossed her head back and laughed, spinning into her partner. I practically fell over myself, trying to shove my petticoats back down. Gian dropped to the ground, his legs split to either side of him.
Are you all right? I yelled.
Dear heaven above, that had to have hurt. He hopped back onto his feet, then kicked one limb up and clapped his hands below the knee, his grin wicked and wild and free.
Come on, try it out. You'll like it.
I'd much sooner enjoy stabbing my hand with a fork. I shook my head and pointed to a table lined with fountains of what appeared to be ice water. A refreshment was a much better idea, and the cold water might help alleviate some of his drunkenness.
I'm thirsty.
His gaze stumbled over to the general direction I'd indicated. His brows tugged close. He squinted a bit, then smiled.
Ah, excellent idea. I'm starting to understand Mephistopheles' admiration.
I could barely hear him over the music and decided it wasn't worth pursuing. If he believed the ringmaster was truly infatuated with me, it simply meant our act was working. We made our way through the crowd, most of whom parted as Gian cut his way through. I stayed close behind him, both out of necessity and worry that I'd get swept up in another lurid dance. He marched right over to the first spigot and prepared a drink. I subtly shifted, taking in the people kissing in dark corners. My brows shot to my hairline when I noticed Cassie wrapped around a young man who most decidedly wasn't Mephistopheles. In fact, I believed it might be the contortionist, though it was hard to be sure since they were so entwined. Gian handed me a cloudy drink and followed my gaze.
Don't worry about her. There's nothing going on with her and Mephistopheles. Not for a while now.
I accepted the drink and sniffed. It didn't smell very strong, but I didn't want to chance impairing my own deductive abilities. Was she upset when she...
Found out he was actually interested in you?
He laughed.
I've never seen someone so small throw such a fit. She trashed her costume and nearly tossed a shoe through Andreas's magic mirror.
His attention turned to my untouched drink. I handed it over, and he gulped it down in one greedy drab.
Now that would have been something to see.
Would Andreas get violent? Behind his mask, I could have sworn his eyes dilated.
I mean, it would have broken his heart.
He fixed another drink and swayed in place.
Anyway, Cassie's not mad at you. If she's angry at anyone, it's Mephistopheles. He'd better watch himself. She's the type to teach lessons. You should have seen that last guy.
He shook his head.
He'd have been better off with the lions.
I tried not to watch her too closely. She was now backing the same young man against the wall, kissing down his neck. It was much too intimate a moment to intrude upon, even though she had no qualms of making a show of it.
That's Sebastian.
The contortionist?
That and he's her husband.
Gian chuckled at my stunned expression. Someone chose that moment to shoot a light out. I threw myself to the ground, hands over my head as glass rained down, and the room got that much darker.
Performers whooped at the dimmer lighting. My pulse thrashed about as I slowly stood. This was madness. Completely unfazed by the growing debauchery, Jian tossed his next drink back, then staggered over to the fountain. I feared if he drank anything else, I'd not get any useful information from him. Shoving my own nervousness aside, I hurried after him.
Cassie and Sebastian are married, I asked. He must have been furious about Mephistopheles.
A motive to destroy the carnival if ever there was one. Might they be a murderous duo? I stared as they clawed at each other's clothing. Jealousy was a powerful motive for anyone, and each of them might be suffering from it. Sebastian, because his wife had so openly pursued another man, and Cassie, for so openly being cast aside. I wanted to rush to Thomas and tell him every last theory sprouting up in my mind, but the cursed bargain prevented me from doing that.
They both do as they please and it works for them.
Jian looked at me through half-lidded eyes.
Hey, you haven't finished your drink.
I didn't bother pointing out that he'd done that for me twice.
Let's make a toast.
Maybe we ought to hold off until next time, I suggested.
His slurring was much worse. He waved me off and went about making two more drinks, concentrating as if the fate of the world depended on this potion. I would have been more amused if I wasn't worried the persons responsible for three deaths were passionately embracing in the corner. Jian poured a knuckle of green liquid into each glass, then managed to place slotted spoons over them without knocking the glasses over, a miracle considering the state he was in. Next, he placed sugar cubes on the spoons, set them ablaze, and maneuvered everything over to the water fountain after the flame extinguished. Lining the spigots up with the sugar, he twisted them on. Ice water dripped slowly, disintegrating the sugar as it fell into the awaiting liquor. The pale green color shifted to an opaque smoke, reminding me of a forbidden brew. It finally clicked what it was. Absinthe. Intrigued, I accepted the glass, holding it up to the dim light. It was all the rage in both upper-class houses and bawdy clubs. Some claimed it offered hallucinations, but that was only true if extra wormwood had been added to it. I bit my lip. I wanted to try it very badly, but I also needed to act responsibly and gather clues. Someone stepped up beside me, but a lot of people jostled about. I didn't pay them any mind.
Are you going to pretend to drink that?
I snapped my attention around. Cassie raised her brows.
Or do you need some help? I haven't pretended to drink anything. Maybe not, she studied me. But there are other things you're pretending, aren't there?
Her attention left me briefly, and I didn't have to follow her gaze to know she was speaking of the ringmaster.
You might be acting at infatuation, but he's not.
I swallowed hard. I couldn't detect any malice in her words. If anything, there was almost a sense of camaraderie, like we were sisters in battle, fighting against wicked men. I lifted my glass to my lips.
I appreciate your advice, I said, but I really am enjoying my time here.
I went to toss back the drink as I'd seen Jian do several times, when a hand shot out and covered the rim, my lips pressed against the crescent moon-stitched glove, and I drew back as if I'd been burned. Mephistopheles shook his head.
This might be a little too magical for you, Miss Wadsworth. I'd like to return you to your chambers in one piece. Heaven forbid Thomas Cresswell comes challenging me to a duel.
He held my stare, and I could have sworn there was true concern in his face. I politely removed his hand from my glass, aware of our audience. I had no doubt he was too, which was precisely why he shouldn't have mentioned Thomas.
Have a drink with me.
It's late.
I lifted a shoulder.
Suit yourself.
Before he could utter another word, I gulped my drink down. It was most unladylike and barbarous. I loved it. It tasted of licorice and burned pleasantly on the way down, different from wine in the sense of the warmth that spread from my stomach to my limbs. My body felt as if it was as light as air. Muffled sounds grew louder, colors richer. Someone laughed close by, and I giggled along with them for no good reason at all.
Come, let's get you to bed.
Mephistopheles gently took my arm, his brow creased. He really was quite good at all this pretend stuff. He almost had me convinced he cared. I wriggled out of his grasp, grabbing a handful of my petticoats as I darted away. The coarse material felt amazing beneath my touch, and I suddenly wanted to prance around the room, kicking my legs up. No wonder everyone appeared so happy. This elixir was pure magic. A woman wearing a full mask stuck her hand out, waving me over. Several women had their arms linked, throwing kicks in unison. Suddenly, it was the most logical thing to do. Without hesitation, I hooked my arm around hers and joined in the fun. My heart thundered in my chest, alive and boisterous. I'd never felt so untethered before, so free from judgment and restraint. My entire family would balk at my behavior. For all I knew, Thomas would even be puzzled. But I didn't care. Not about any of that darkness. Murder, crime, sadness, loss. I pretended each emotion was a balloon that needed to be released into the universe, and I let it all go. I kicked my legs higher each time I switched feet, ignoring the fact I was exposing more skin than I'd ever shown in public before. I closed my eyes, becoming one with the rhythm around me. This was how it felt to truly be free. Two large hands clasped my waist, lifting me in the air. I laughed and shook my skirts, a thrill going through me. Liza had been right. Having a bit of fun didn't detract from the seriousness of the evening, but it was a fantastic way of coping with it. Death surrounded me, but life did too. In these stolen moments, I appreciated just how alive I was. Lips pressed close to my ear, and I instinctively arched into the touch, momentarily forgetting where I was and who I was with. I was lowered to the ground, and I spun the second my slippers touched down, grinning. Mephistopheles's eyes widened in shock, and he abruptly stumbled back. I was having too much fun to be disappointed. He wasn't who I imagined. "Would you please do that again?" I asked. He hesitated briefly, then brought me near and twirled me away, his cockiness returning as he lifted me above the dance floor. I held my hands out to either side as he spun us around. "I feel like I'm in a fairy tale." He placed me back down, eyes filled with mirth.
"If a fairy tale is what you're after, I'll put a curse on you and lock you in a coffin or tower of your choosing. Then I'll kiss you awake, and we'll live happily ever after. That's how those things work, you know."
I shook my head. "You're really charming, aren't you?"
"That would be Prince Charming to you, Miss Wadsworth."
We didn't speak again for what felt like hours, but I danced and laughed and had almost convinced myself that a future in a carnival wouldn't be the worst fate after all. 17. Something in the Cards. Audrey Rose's Cabin, RMS Etruria, 5 January, 1889. I was up before the sun, peering out the porthole in my cabin, watching the nearly black waters turn gold as it rose and stretched across the horizon. The sea was choppy, promising a winter storm in the next day or so. I turned around and couldn't stop a smile from forming. Liza slept soundly, her limbs tangled up in the covers and her hair spilling around her like drizzled caramel. I still could not believe we'd sneaked into the carnival's party and that I'd actually danced the can-can. It was reckless, and the memory provoked worry. Not over what I'd done, but rather how much I'd enjoyed it. I only wished Thomas could have joined us. Pushing that out of my mind, I quietly moved to the small vanity in my room, leafing through the notes of parchment I'd written out sometime after we'd returned to our cabin. I included every last odd occurrence that had happened since we'd boarded the Etruria. On one scrap of parchment I had, "Miss Arden murdered, likely poisoned, though evidence was indeterminable. Playing card found prior to body on stage. Ace of spades. Connected? Father, a physician. Tarot card enactment, 7 of swords. On another, "Stolen bolts of silk, scarves." On a third sheet I'd written, "Miss Crenshaw murdered by poison, no playing card found. Tarot card enactment, the star." From my meager attempt at sorting out the tarot card meanings, the best I could come up with for the star was transformation. How that fit in with the case and murder was beyond me. The next piece of paper said, Miss Prescott, first to be murdered, stabbed. Playing card found, Ace of Clubs. Father a chief magistrate. Tarot card enactment, Ten of Swords. Betrayal. Quite literally, stabbed in the back. I sat back, fingers tapping over the papers. There had to be something there, something that tied them all together. Or perhaps there were two separate mysteries coexisting. One person was committing petty burglaries, another was murdering women as if they were tarot cards sprung to life. My skin crawled like beetles in a grave. I knew Thomas was correct about criminals using the ships for anonymous passage between continents. But could there truly be two criminals aboard our vessel? I supposed it wasn't out of the question. Two out of a few hundred passengers wasn't that high a number at all. What I wanted to do next was gain entry to Miss Crenshaw's cabin. After the discovery of chocolate cake in her stomach, I wanted to compare a sample from her room. Someone knocked lightly on my door, and assuming it was either a tea service or an attendant, I opened it. I clutched my dressing gown closed, narrowing my eyes. A quick glance over my shoulder found my cousin still lightly snoring, her breath steep and even. It's a bit early to be calling on me, Cresswell. I tugged him inside, peering down the deck to be sure he hadn't been seen. People will think you've spent the night here. I studied the curve of his lips and the widening of his eyes. Fiend. Which is precisely what you're hoping for.
You injure me with that accusation, Wadsworth. Must I always have ulterior motives?
He lifted his hand to his heart, staggering a bit.
Perhaps I was simply bringing you tea.
Oh, is that what you were doing? I stared pointedly at his empty hands. Forget it. You're here, and that's actually perfect. Come look at these, but be quiet. I indicated the random clues, trying to ignore the fact I was in a dressing robe and we were in a bedchamber. At least we weren't alone. If he started kissing me, I'm not sure I'd wish to stop. I'd missed him immensely last night. Do you see any pattern or formula with these? Thomas removed his top hat and was across the room in a few short, long-limbed strides. He pushed the papers around the desk, frowning a bit at one.
Miss Prescott was murdered on night one, but Miss Crenshaw went missing before we set sail. The order in which we find the bodies doesn't necessarily indicate the order in which they were murdered.
Thomas, I said, a new idea sprouting, will you teach me how to place myself in the mindset of a murderer, like how you did the first time we met? He strummed his fingers against his thighs.
In your uncle's class?
Yes, I said, attention shooting over to my still-sleeping cousin. When you pretended as if you were Jack the Ripper and had gutted the first victim. I want to learn to do that. It's not much different than all of the magic in the carnival, is it?
Thomas looked at me strangely. I suppose they both include a certain level of play-acting, but I'd like to think my method is a bit more scientific than the man swinging swords about.
Still, I'd like... Another knock came at the door, and I swallowed my words as quickly as Anisha had gulped down those flames. I started shoving Thomas toward my trunk, not knowing where else to stash him. Liza stirred but didn't wake. Get in there, quickly! Without much argument, Thomas folded himself into the trunk, an impressive feat given his tall stature, and I tossed one of my gowns over the top, hoping to hide him under the tent-like skirts. I smoothed down the front of my dressing gown, cracking the door an inch. Mephistopheles leaned against the door jamb, gaze dropping to my robe. I felt my breath leave my body in a whoosh as if I'd been punched. This was the worst possible situation. I could not let Thomas overhear our conversation because of the bargain, and I could not admit to the ringmaster that a young man was already in my chambers. If Mephistopheles said anything about the can-can last night, I was certain Thomas wouldn't let the subject drop until I fessed up.
Hello, Miss Wadsworth. Were you expecting someone else? You seem like you've swallowed an egg.
He made to invite himself in, but I held my arm out stiffly. What are you doing here?
Good day to you as well, he said. It's amazing. You have no issue with our meeting in darkened nooks on the ship, or coming to my cabin at indecent hours. But heaven forbid I initiate a private meeting. The shame.
If you wish to speak with me, I said, keeping my voice low, then we shall pick a place to meet, in public, preferably when I am decently dressed and have a chaperone.
Was Liza acting as your chaperone last night?
He peered around me, making a show of inspecting my quarters.
Are you hiding a secret lover I ought to be aware of?
I'm in the process of buffing my scalpels, I said, indicating the medical bag on my nightstand. If you're not careful, I might use those blades on your sparkly suits.
Threats are unbecoming and don't suit you.
He sniffed, feigning hurt. He turned to leave, then pivoted back. Even at dawn he wore a mask, reflecting the orangey reds of the rising sun.
Oh, and you ought to tell Mr. Cresswell to remember his hat. I see it sitting out on that vanity of yours. Wouldn't want anyone to have the wrong impression now, would you? Thank goodness your cousin is pretending to sleep, else people might really start talking.
Before I could deny or claim it as my own, the ringmaster stuck his hands in his pockets and walked swiftly down the promenade. The sound of his sullen whistling added to the chorus of wind and waves. I curled my hands into fists, wishing I could muster up loathing him. Having two young men around who felt the compulsion to share each annoying observation they made was enough to drive anyone mad. Once the door clicked shut, Thomas pushed the dress aside, brows raised.
Now might be a good time to discuss, Mephistopheles, especially since your uncle has asked me to watch after you. What's so important that he needs to call on you at this hour? Doesn't he know that level of impropriety is strictly my area of expertise?
I walked over to him, bent down, and cupped his face in my hands, relishing the feel of his warm skin without a layer of silk between us. We will discuss everything soon, I promise. But right now, I need to get dressed, and you need to leave before someone finds you here. After sneaking another glance at my slumbering cousin, I pressed my lips to his, soft and gentle at first, then let go of polite restraint. Thomas didn't seem to mind the distraction. He pulled me near as our kiss deepened. With great effort, I kissed him gently, then sat back on my heels. It was most decidedly my favorite form of sleight of hand. We wouldn't want anyone to have the wrong impression, I said, unable to hide my smile. They'd assume we were in here kissing.
We wouldn't want that now.
Thomas shook his head, and somehow we were kissing again.
It would be highly indecent, being almost alone, in the room of the girl I want to marry, the one who keeps refusing me.
Thomas, you know I'm not refusing you, I said. I want to do this the correct way. My father deserves to be included. Please don't think it indicates hesitation on my part. A wedding? Liza popped up from the covers, eyes wide with delight. I must help plan it. What season are you thinking? Spring would be divine. The flowers, pastels. Winter is also breathtaking in the right application. Your black hair would look gorgeous against ice blues and whites.
A wedding? Elopement? I am in favor of any season or occasion.
He hopped out of the trunk, then helped me stand, giving me a chaste kiss. After he plucked his top hat from the vanity, he smiled.
We will worry about the details later.
He glanced back at the table of clues I'd laid out.
In the interim, I'll see what I can figure out about those. Maybe some connection will make itself known. Oh, and Liza.
He turned a grin on her.
I look rather breathtaking in pale colors. Spring is just around the corner, too. Perhaps you might start there.
With a tip of his hat, he slipped out of my cabin. Listening as Liza prattled on about wedding ideas, I went back over to my trunk and rummaged through the silks and velvets. Your father is going to be so pleased, she said, that dreamy look still on her face. I cannot believe you've not mentioned his intentions sooner. I do hope that Harry will propose. We make a decent match as well, don't we? The letter Mephistopheles had supplied seemed to catch fire in my nightstand. Once Liza read it, her heart was going to shatter. I offered a tight smile, unable to break the news to her just yet. I have no doubt you'll marry a man who makes you very happy. There were only so many secrets I could keep before I started to unravel.
18. The Fool. First Class Promenade, RMS Etruria, 5 January, 1889.
I tucked my hand into the crook of Thomas's arm and tried not to gawk at the transformation of the ship as we made our way down the now crowded promenade. The public rooms and long covered deck of first class had been redressed as if they were private carnival tents in a floating bazaar. The gentleman's smoke room was filled with warped looking glasses. The dining saloon boasted tightrope walkers and acrobats and clowns. I shuddered at their garish face paint, deciding I'd much rather splice open a bloated corpse than be locked in a room with a single clown. I sped up, not wishing to linger anywhere near them, and Thomas chuckled. I flashed him my finest scowl, which only made him laugh harder.
"Removing intestines before luncheon is all right, but clowns are where your limits end?"
he asked.
"You never cease to amaze me, Wadsworth. What if I dressed up like one and knocked at your door later? Do you think you'd faint into my ruffle-sleeved arms? Reviving you might be worth the makeup and silly costume."
"Don't make me sneak spiders into your cabin," I said. "I am not above dirty warfare."
"You delightfully cruel woman."
His eyes practically danced with mischief.
"What does it say about me that I find myself even more attracted to you after that threat?"
"It means you are as darkly twisted as I am, my friend." We continued down the promenade and paused to watch Sebastian, the contortionist, twist his body in ways that boggled my anatomy-centered mind. He lifted his chin in hello and scuttled across the deck as if he were an arachnid. I laughed aloud as Thomas hurried us away. I couldn't stop the double beat of my heart when we came upon the newly transformed music room. An ornately lettered sign sat propped out front that promised secrets of the past, present, and future to be divined by the amazing Andreas, mystic and seer of all fortunes. He hadn't included his tarot namesake, the Fool, in his title, a smart choice considering I doubted that would attract many believers. I stopped walking, forcing Thomas to come to a halt, as I recalled another time I'd encountered someone with claims of seeing into the future. During the Ripper investigation, a man named Robert James Lees had offered his assistance to Scotland Yard, claiming he'd had direct communication with one of the victims. Not wanting to miss a potential clue, Thomas and I had traveled to his home, taking him up on his offer to divine secrets of the recently deceased. Chills meandered down my spine. I had a feeling it wasn't due to the cold ocean breeze snaking down the open-air corridors. Mr. Lees had claimed to have spoken with my mother, and as much as I disbelieved such non-factual nonsense, I'd found what I'd been looking for, just as my mother's spirit had told him. Whether it was luck or pure coincidence, there was something to it, or at least something worth investigating. Perhaps I might unearth a clue for this investigation, one that might end these murders for good. On a ship filled with devilish debauchery, hope seemed to be the deadliest sin of them all. I felt it tugging me forward, taunting and teasing me with the promise of something I knew to be impossible. Andreas was a showman, not a diviner. He could no more tell me who killed those women than he could bring forth my mother. Thomas inspected the sign I was transfixed by, and then my face. He smiled sadly, dissecting my emotions and deducing their root. In times like this, I was grateful for his uncanny ability to read my moods.
"Would you like to have your future read by the amazing Andreas?" he asked.
"You don't believe in fate or fortunes?"
"No, I don't."
He grinned at my exasperated expression. How one man could be utterly charming in one instant and sharp as a blade in the next was utterly maddening.
"I'll meet you back here in a little while."
I peered into the black and white striped curtains that hung in place of a door, biting my lip. "Is that a polite way of saying you'll not be joining me? What about Uncle's proclamation that you must escort me everywhere? A leash only extends so far, you know."
I will never be your keeper, Audrey Rose.
Any traces of humor vanished. Thomas lifted my hand to his lips and pressed a kiss to it, causing my heart to race for a new reason.
Plus, it's a magnanimous gesture to not distract either yourself or the amazing Andreas with my own exemplary skills at divining the future.
He laughed when I rolled my eyes.
That, and I saw a stand on the main deck selling pastry, fried in melted butter and doused in sugar.
You're abandoning me for sweets, I said with a slight shake of my head. How magnanimous indeed.
Don't be jealous of pastry, my love. Its golden crust and buttery taste cannot compare to your delectable personality. Much.
Thomas eyed the sign once more, lips twitching upward.
All right, let's make a bargain, since those things seem to be all the craze here. I'll give you 5 minutes to get settled, and another 10 for the amazing Andreas to call forth the ghosties and convince them to stay for a spot of tea and a chat. Then I'll return.
How is that a bargain? I asked.
It's not really. I was seeing if you were paying attention.
I leveled a severe look at him, and he held his hands up in mock surrender.
A joke, you know, those things I'm horrid at, but I'm practicing nonetheless.
When he leaned in, his lips grazing my ear, there wasn't anything humorous about the desire that shot through me.
Perhaps I'll bring you back a treat, too.
I smiled sweetly. Here I thought simply being in your presence was treat enough. Before he could entertain himself with another of his witticisms, I swept open the striped drapes and stepped inside the fortune teller's lair. Inside, a crystal chandelier hung from a ceiling that seemed to reach forever. Layers of lush black and white silk gathered around the light fixture, pinned back in a way to give the appearance of being under a huge tent. Silver candles dripped wax onto wrought iron candelabras, evenly spaced throughout the interior of the room. From the shadows, Andreas emerged. I took a sharp breath. His mask was the color of fresh blood, and reminded me of a skull that had been recently boiled of its flesh. He stood there a moment, not moving at all, allowing me an opportunity to drink him in. He wore a navy tailcoat embroidered with silver constellations and black trousers and gloves. He bent at the waist, blonde hair pale enough that it was almost white.
Pardon my entrance, Miss Wadsworth. My soul travels the in-between, restless and wandering,
he said in accented English.
In constant search of the past, present and future, I find time to be an idle wave.
I tried puzzling that out and failed.
I am the amazing Andreas. Welcome to my chamber of divination.
It's good to see you again. I bobbed my head in greeting and fully entered the room. Pillows edged in silver fringe sat piled in clusters, though there were also stools and chairs and tables. Elaborate incense burners hung in tiered layers in one corner, filling the room with a spicy and enticing scent. It reminded me of Mephistopheles. I bit my lip, unsure of where to go. Lounging on the floor felt too indecent, though I supposed being alone with a masked man was debasing enough.
Sit, please.
The amazing Andreas gestured to a rather large looking glass. It leaned against the wall, tall and somehow slightly foreboding for such an unassuming piece of furniture.
The looking glass is infused with magic from Bavaria, he said. It is no ordinary glass. This has the ability to show your future.
He ran his hands down the front of his very nice waistcoat, puffing out his chest a bit.
To my knowledge, it has near 100% accuracy with showing who your husband shall be. Most young women leave here quite satisfied.
How extraordinarily disappointing. Is that all it does? I asked. I thought it showed one's future. What if there is no marriage in mine? Will it not show my career, or any other part of my life, then? There are those who prefer to not marry anyone. What does the looking glass show them? Andreas gave me the sort of look one made when passing a foul chamber pot. To his credit, his tone was still quite cordial when he spoke.
In order for me to work the spell properly, I'll need to secure your hands with a bit of ribbon behind your back.
He produced a thick black satiny ribbon from his coat, allowing its end to flutter down in dramatic fashion.
And place a cover across your eyes. Spell work is very fickle, you see.
I pursed my lips, hoping to contain the unpleasant retort that had sprung to mind. Now I understood why they call him the fool. He'd have to be one to think I'd agree to being tied up and blindfolded while alone with him. Was there any young man in this carnival who wasn't a miscreant? After a minute I said, Indeed, I imagine it is fickle. He sighed, the first unscripted sound that he'd uttered.
Mephistopheles thinks it will be good practice for the finale. He said the blindfold provides the right amount of flair.
I stared at the foggy-looking glass, unconvinced such a dingy thing could possess any flair. Well, since Mephistopheles isn't here, I think we're safe from listening to his demands. I glanced around, focus falling to a deck of cards. I pointed them out. I'd prefer to have a tarot reading. It might be useful in our investigation. Andreas didn't seem very keen on disobeying the ringmaster, but smiled.
As you wish.
Without further comment, I situated myself on the cushioned stool and kept my attention fastened on the cards he shuffled. I only saw the backs of them, but they were beautifully done, painted by a skilled artist. They were darker than night and had silver filigree flourishes at each corner and a black full moon with a pearly crescent on one side. Silver stars were placed above, below, and to each side of the moon within a moon. Andreas caught me admiring them and held one up.
May I present the one and only Cirque d'Eclipse Tarot?
He smiled shyly at my raised brows and added,
Mephistopheles wishes for the Moonlight Carnival's theme to be present in every detail, even something as small and insignificant as tarot cards.
He turned the card one way, then the next, showing off the magnificent shine of the silver lines, but never revealing the image on the front. Two interlocking eights lay at the top and bottom of the cards, reminding me of something else I couldn't quite place. Did you paint those? I asked, doing my best to keep my hands to myself. I longed to flip them over and see the fine artwork I knew had to be present on the other side. They're absolutely magnificent. I've never seen paint shimmer like that before.
I did not, he said, shaking his head. Mephistopheles made these himself.
He prefers to...
Mephistopheles teaches everyone cartomancy and tarot. We're unable to join the carnival until we're proficient.
He chuckled and continued shuffling the cards, leaving me to wonder at what he didn't say. So every performer is well-versed on both playing cards and tarot? Andreas nodded, but didn't elaborate.
Is this your first experience with tarot?
Aside from the bodies that were being staged, though I didn't feel it was the appropriate response. Instead, I nodded absently, as a new thought wedged itself into my brain. I watched the fortune teller shuffle the cards, thoughts spinning. If Mephistopheles was into crafting cards, could he be the person leaving them with the bodies? I shook myself out of that nonsensical thought. He was no murderer. I watched Andreas again. He obviously was proficient with tarot and the various meanings, but so was every other performer, thanks to Mephistopheles. If you're the fortune teller, why does everyone need to know the card meanings? Andreas scratched the back of his neck.
People pay a decent sum for their futures. When we're in a new town, we often set up multiple tents that feature tarot readings or go to different pubs. Sometimes Sebastian plays the role, sometimes even Gian. We can triple our income. It's good business. Now,
Andreas set the cards face down before me.
It is your turn. Shuffle the deck until you feel the first one speak to you. Beware, it might only be a whisper, so listen closely.
I reached for the deck, then drew my hand back. What if the cards don't say anything?
They will. Closing your eyes and focusing on a single question helps,
Andreas said.
How do you feel about yourself and your path? Think of only that and close your eyes and shuffle.
the answer will make itself known.
I did as I was bid, unable to help feeling ridiculous as I shuffled one card to the next, concentrating on a multitude of emotions. That the cards could possibly tell me something about myself that I didn't already know was foolish. How I'd been taken with the idea of visiting the fortune teller was a testament to how much this silly carnival was affecting my best judgment. Maybe Andreas was called the fool after the people he attracted to his tent, like myself. Suddenly, I felt a slight pull in my center. A strange bit of resistance to shuffling to the next card. My eyes flew open. Howie!
See? Spirits speak in whispers and tugs.
Andreas smiled his patient smile and tapped the table in front of him. He certainly didn't look like a killer when he wore that expression, but I'd not rule him out based on that.
Place the first one here. Lay it face down. We'll do a 6-card spread and then flip them over once they've all been pulled, all right?
All right. I inhaled deeply, unsure of the validity of it, but the alternative was watching Uncle spear his vegetables and bicker with Mrs. Harvey over the dessert course.
This time, I want you to focus on your heart's deepest desire. What is a truth you hide, even from yourself?
I closed my eyes tightly, unsure of how I'd find something hidden from me. Once I felt that same odd resistance, I pulled another card. The next 4 questions I needed to concentrate on were my fears, what was working with me in life, what forces were conspiring against me, and what the outcome of it all would be. Satisfied that I'd taken my part seriously, Andreas flipped the first card over, revealing a gnarled, bearded man standing alone at the top of a frozen mountain peak, the sky a swirling black and grey behind him.
Ah, the hermit. Since this card indicates how you feel about yourself, I'd wager you're struggling with an internal conflict. You likely have many questions, are feeling alone, and perhaps have run out of patience. Now is the time to retreat until you find answers to what troubles you.
I blinked down at the card, disbelief dragging my mouth into a frown. It was luck. Stupid luck that the first card held a shred of truth. I was feeling alone and in need of answers. I had to figure out so many mysteries, and because of my bargain with Mephistopheles, I couldn't even recruit Thomas for some of the problems I had. Things would be so much easier with my partner. I hated retreating on my own. Unwilling to give anything away, I flipped over the next card. A young masked man danced in a disjointed manner, his outfit crude and clown-like. Clearly my inner spirit was feeling like a court jester. Fabulous. According to this card, the thing I longed for most was to be a fool. Though I supposed it was also accurate. This entire evening was a foolish distraction I could ill afford, and yet here I sat, having my cards read like a gullible mark.
The fool. An interesting choice. It is the only card in the tarot that indicates infinity.
Andreas steepled his fingers and stared unabashedly into my eyes.
Is there someone in your life you're unsure of? Perhaps a beau or potential suitor? This card indicates you might have conflicting feelings for someone. Mephistopheles or...
I turned the next card over. I did not wish to even step onto that path. The world, what does this one mean? It was another magnificent piece of artwork. A young woman swung 2 batons, the train of her lavender dress floating on an invisible breeze. In each corner of the card, there was a different beast. Man, eagle, bull, and a winged lion.
Andreas tapped the card. This represents your fears. You're close to giving up because you're afraid of failure.
I turned over the next 2 cards. The Empress and the Sun. What was going for and against me?
The Empress is a time of harvesting. It's a wonderful time to start a family or pursue your passion. The Sun, on the other hand, is causing a few delays. If you can persevere,
You'll achieve what you seek in a blaze of flame and glory.
I exhaled through my nose. It was all rubbish, but I had to admit it was disturbingly accurate for my current predicament.
Andreas, I began, not quite ready to see my last card.
What does the star card mean?
He blinked at my change in focus, but then drew his brows together in thought.
The star is an interesting card. It relates to personal transformation, hope, and being blessed in your endeavors. Though there are many, many other ways it can be incorporated into a reading. Why the interest?
Simple curiosity.
Not wanting to get into a discussion regarding the last murder victim, I turned the final card over and scowled down at it. There was no need for me to read the name at the bottom. The artist had done a fine job indeed of painting a self-portrait. Mephistopheles's likeness smirked up at me, the wicked glint in his eyes, a near-perfect replica of the young man in reality.
The magician, Andreas said, never taking his attention off the card, is the outcome most likely in your future. Beware of making bargains you cannot keep, though. The devil is a trickster in us all. He often makes you believe one thing, while covering the truth in plain sight.
Chills caressed my body at those words. So similar to my earlier thoughts.
Andreas bit his lip, seeming to weigh his next words carefully.
Be cautious who you give your heart to, and be even more wary of those who seek to steal it.
19. A Severed Connection. Promenade. RMS Etruria. 5 January, 1889. Thomas leaned against the wall opposite the music room, finishing off the last bit of his fried pastry. He grinned when he spied me lingering outside the fortune teller's makeshift tent and held up a second sugar-coated pastry.
I swear I was going to rescue you from the amazing Andreas once I finished my sweet dough. Here,
he handed my treat over.
Tell me this isn't the most delicious thing you've ever tasted. Aside from me, naturally.
I huffed a laugh. Thomas was a scoundrel and a horrendous flirt, but I couldn't deny enjoying it. Despite the unease swirling through my system at the sight of the magician card and the revelation of how many performers were skilled with tarot, I popped a piece of fried dough into my mouth and nearly groaned. It truly was one of the most delicious things I'd ever eaten.
Do I even want to know how much butter they used to make it taste that good?
Thomas pretended to think on it a moment. Probably not, Wadsworth, and you most certainly don't wish to know how much sugar they sprinkled onto it once it came out of its butter bath.
He offered his arm and we slowly made our way toward the saloon.
Did Andreas gift you with an amazing glimpse at your future? I hear his magic looking glass is all the rage. A young woman was speaking very loudly about her future husband. Apparently, she saw his reflection in the glass and wasn't pleased.
I offered him a bemused look, but didn't comment.
I'm taking it that you're stunned into silence by how adorable our children are. I bet they take after me the most. My Cresswell genes are quite impressive, though you will make fine little ones yourself.
He patted my hand lovingly.
Try not to be too hard on yourself, though. We cannot help who is the fairest of us.
I stopped walking, mouth dropping open.
Our children?
Thomas cocked his head.
You know, smaller-sized humans who spit up on things and require an indecent amount of attention until they're grown. I imagine we'll have an entire brood of them.
You can't be serious,
Mephistopheles strode down the corridor with Gian and Anisha, lips twitching into his signature smirk when he glanced up and noticed us. He broke away from the performers and shook a few eager hands of passengers as he drew near. I silently prayed he wouldn't mention our dancing last night.
What a fortunate surprise, Miss Wadsworth.
He took my hand in his, pretending to kiss it, and pulled an ink-blue rose from the air.
A rose for the lovely Audrey Rose. Oh, wonderful, Thomas said. Satan has decided to claw his way out of hell and join us. I had no idea he did subpar tricks, though.
The ringmaster turned his attention on my companion, as if noticing him for the first time.
Satan, the devil, prince of the under.